Chapter 10. More Harm Than Good. It's like waking up in your house with a room full of smoke, opening the window to let the smoke out, and then going back to bed. Unnamed medical expert. In the last chapter, we heard global public health advocates accuse Bill Gates and Dr. Fauci of hijacking WHO's public health agenda away from the projects that are proven to curb infectious diseases, clean water, hygiene, nutrition, and economic development, and diverting international aid to wedge open emerging markets for their multinational partners and to serve their personal vaccine fetish. This chapter will examine Gates's underlying assertion that his African and Asian vaccines are yielding a net public health benefit. Allergy to placebo testing. Most medicinal products cannot get licensed without first undergoing randomized placebo-controlled trials that compare health outcomes, including all-cause mortalities, in medicated versus unmedicated cohorts. Tellingly, in March 2017, I met with Dr. Fauci, Francis Collins, and a White House referee, and separately with Peter Marks from CBER at FDA, to complain that HHS was by then mandating 69 doses of 16 vaccines for America's children, none of which had ever been tested for safety against placebos prior to licensing. Dr. Fauci and Dr. Collins denied that this was true and insisted that those vaccines were safety tested. They were unable, however, after several weeks, to provide us a citation for a single clinical trial using an inert placebo against a vaccine. In October 2017, Del Bigtree and Aaron Seary, who both attended these meetings, joined me in suing HHS under the Freedom of Information Act to produce the long-promised safety studies. 10 months after the meeting with Fauci and Collins, on the courthouse steps, HHS admitted that we were in fact correct. None of the mandated childhood vaccines had been tested for safety in pre-licensing inert placebo tests. The best of Bill Gates's African vaccines are all on this list. But Bill Gates also uses a large retinue of much more dangerous and demonstrably ineffective vaccines in Africa, ones that Western countries have actually rejected because of dire safety signals. That means that nobody knows the risks of these products, and nobody can say with specificity or certainty that any of Bill Gates's flagship vaccines actually prevent more injuries and deaths than they cause. Furthermore, it means that all of Gates's African vaccines are experimental products. For Gates and his cronies, the continent is a mass human experiment, with no control groups and no functional data collection systems, for shoddily tested, high-risk medical interventions. His unwillingness to actually measure or prove the effectiveness of his prescriptions in reducing mortality and improving health suggests that Gates appreciates that his vaccines are not the human health miracle he proclaims. Because Gates and Dr. Fauci suffer the same allergy to funding studies that examine the effectiveness of their vaccines in improving health and reducing mortality, neither man has ever offered empirical evidence to support their pivotal claim that their vaccines have saved millions of lives. The meager published science examining this question indicates that virtually all of Gates's blockbuster African and Asian vaccines, polio, DTP, hepatitis B, malaria, meningitis, HPV, and HIB, cause far more injuries and deaths than they avert. This chapter will offer a rough cost-benefit analysis of each of Bill Gates's flagship African and Indian vaccines. Bill and Tony's African Safari. In the colonial era, Africa provided model precincts for testing new vaccines. In the 1950s, white colonial overlords rolled out the red carpet for pharmaceutical companies to perform vaccine experiments on compliant test subjects numbering in the millions. Drug companies spend some 90% of their drug development costs on Phase 3 human trials. Every trial delay eats into the critical time period when the product enjoys patent protection. In the 1980s, pharma therefore moved most of its clinical trials to poor nations where human guinea pigs are cheap and even the most severe injuries will rarely delay the study. Government complicity and anemic corporate liability laws allow vaccine makers to write off injuries as collateral damage with little consequence or accountability. Today, pharma still regards Africa as the beau ideal to test immunizations and as a lucrative receptacle for dumping expired and defective stocks. Bill Gates has played a key role in legitimizing this arrangement while collaborating with captive or corrupt WHO officials to scam Western donor nations into footing the bill and guaranteeing rich profits for pharmaceutical companies in which, coincidentally, he holds hefty stock positions. Gates, the biggest funder of vaccines in the world, is heavily invested in lucrative partnerships with almost all the world's largest vaccine companies. Bill and Melinda Gates have continued the tradition of human experimentation in Africa, with the WHO stepping neatly into the role of an enabling colonial vassal. Following the colonial era, most of Africa's new nationalist governments considered healthcare a national priority, and many of them developed model health programs for their populations. During the 1970s, International Monetary Fund, IMF, austerity policies bankrupted the best of these programs and left African nations almost entirely dependent on the WHO to finance national health ministries and vital HIV programs. Using its control of the flow of international assistance, WHO exerts discipline, rewards compliance, and punishes resistance to pharma's African ambitions. WHO uses its funding power to bully African governments that slack on vaccine uptake. Gates's pervasive control over WHO has made Africa his fiefdom. The continent's populations have become his guinea pigs. Vaccines for Bill Gates are a strategic philanthropy that feed his many vaccine-related businesses and give him dictatorial control over global health policies affecting millions of human lives. DTP vaccine, African genocide. A wave of gruesome brain injuries and deaths followed the introduction of diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis, DTP vaccines in the United States and Europe in the 1970s. As early as 1977, a study published by British physicians and researchers in The Lancet established that the risks of the whole-cell pertussis jab used in the DTP vaccine exceed the risks associated with wild pertussis. 6 years later, a 1983 NIH-funded UCLA study found that Wyeth's DTP vaccine was killing or causing severe brain injury, including seizures and death, in one in every 300 vaccinated children. The resultant lawsuits caused the collapse of insurance markets for vaccines and threatened to bankrupt the industry. Wyeth, now Pfizer, claimed to be losing $20 in downstream liability for every dollar it earned on vaccine sales, and induced Congress to pass the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act in 1986, shielding vaccine makers from liability. In 1985, the Institute of Medicine, IOM, recommended the abandonment of the whole-cell version of the pertussis vaccine to avert the high incidence of encephalopathy and deaths. In 1991, the United States, EU countries, and Japan switched to a far safer but less effective dead cell attenuated vaccine, DTaP, and discontinued use of the DTP jab. While Western nations pulled the DTP, WHO gave pharma free rein and cash to dump its toxic inventories in Africa, Asia, and Central America, despite strong evidence of its deadly impacts. Its dangers aside, the old DTP is cheaper to manufacture and more lucrative for pharma, and so, after 2002, Gates and his surrogates, Gavi, WHO, and Global Fund, made DTP the flagship for their African vaccine program and continued giving this neurotoxic and often lethal vaccine to some 156 million African children annually. WHO's use of DTP as its bellwether vaccine to measure national compliance with WHO's vaccine schedule has made DTP today the most popular vaccine on Earth. Health ministries across the world must demonstrate specific uptake goals with the DTP recommendations in order to qualify for vital WHO assistance for HIV and other support. Prior to 2017, neither HHS nor WHO performed the kind of study necessary to ascertain whether the DTP vaccine was actually yielding the beneficial health outcomes about which Gates frequently boasts. That year, the Danish government and the Scandinavian vaccine behemoths Statens Serum Institute and Novo Nordisk commissioned prominent Scandinavian scientists Søren Mogensen and Peter Abbey, both vocal champions of the African vaccine program, to lead an illustrious team of international researchers to examine all-cause mortalities after the DTP inoculations. That massive study put the lie to Gates's mantric incantation that his investment in the DTP vaccine has saved millions of lives. In June 2017, the team published a peer-reviewed study in eBiomedicine, a high-gravitas journal in Elsevier's publishing house Armada. The article parsed data from a so-called natural experiment in Guinea-Bissau, where half the children in certain age groups were vaccinated and the other half were not. The division was randomized. That 2017 study, Mogensen et al. 2017, shows that following their DTP immunization at 3 months, vaccinated girls had tenfold higher mortality than unvaccinated children. The girls were dying of a wide range of diseases, pneumonia, anemia, malaria, dysentery. And for two decades, no one noticed that the dying children were predominantly those who received the vaccine. The DTP vaccine, while protecting children against diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis, had ruined their immune systems, making them vulnerable to a wide range of deadly non-target infections. Mogensen's team arrived at that conclusion, as had the 1977 Lancet study researchers exactly 40 years earlier. DTP vaccine may kill more children from other causes than it saves from diphtheria, tetanus, or pertussis. In other words, Gates's DTP vaccine, instead of saving 10 million lives as he claims, may have unnecessarily killed millions of African girls. At least 7 other studies have confirmed DTP's association with high mortality in vaccinated girls compared to unvaccinated. The idealistic Americans who donated to Gates's African Vaccine Project, believing they were saving African babies, were actually funding a continent-wide female genocide. After completing the study and verifying its shocking results, Peter Abbey, a virtual deity among African vaccine researchers, made an impassioned and remorseful plea to the WHO to reconsider the DTP vaccine. "I guess most of you think that we know what our vaccines are doing," he said. "We don't." Gates, WHO, and Gavi ignored Abbey's appeal and redoubled their efforts to expand DTP vaccinations and to shore up support for the girl-killing jab. The Lancet published a commentary by Gates Foundation Plenipotentiary Chris Elias, Dr. Anthony Fauci, and three apparatchiks from lesser Gates-funded consortia, WHO's Margaret Chan, UNICEF's Director Anthony Lake, and Seth Berkley of Gavi, who portray their deadly African DTP program as a public health triumph. These charlatans proclaimed DTP as one of the bright spots in global well-being and gasconaded that more children are being immunized worldwide than ever before, with the highest level of routine coverage in history, as measured by coverage of three doses of the diphtheria tetanus pertussis DTP-containing vaccine. That project also involved reputationally demoting Abiy with a defamation campaign. A subsequent expert review by the founder of the Cochrane Collaborative, Peter Gotcha, condemned the WHO's attempt to downplay the risks of DTP vaccine. The WHO, he observed, had been dismissive of studies finding detrimental nonspecific effects for the DTP vaccine, while accepting studies finding beneficial nonspecific effects for the measles vaccine. The WHO is inconsistent and biased toward positive effects of vaccines. When a result pleases the WHO, it can be accepted, but not when a result does not please the WHO. Gotcha found the studies by Mogensen and Abiy superior in every respect to the Gates-generated Lancet study. Gates and his WHO vassals continue to bully African nations into taking their lethal DTP vaccines by threatening to withdraw financial aid to their health departments and HIV programs if the government fails to achieve national uptake targets of 90%. Mercury Rising. Many vaccines shipped to underdeveloped countries, including the hepatitis B, Haemophilus influenzae type B, and DTP inoculations, contain bolus doses of the mercury-based preservative and adjuvant thimerosal. The immunity provisions of the 1986 Vaccine Act gave a blank check to U.S. pharmaceutical companies to promote the most shoddily tested vaccines without consequences or cost. Pharma responded with a gold rush to add new lucrative vaccines to the schedule, and by 1991, mercury exposures to U.S. children from the vaccine preservative thimerosal had more than doubled. Parents, physicians, and researchers blamed a subsequent explosion of neurological and autoimmune disease on thimerosal. Alarmed at the exploding epidemics of neurodevelopmental, allergic, and autoimmune diseases in children that began in 1986, CDC commenced in 1999 an in-house study of the vast repository of health and vaccination data from the 10 largest HMOs stored in the Vaccine Safety Data Link, VSD. A specially assembled CDC research team, led by Belgian epidemiologist Thomas Verstraeten, compared health outcomes in hundreds of thousands of vaccinated versus unvaccinated children. The raw data from CDC's 1999 Verstraeten study showed that children who took thimerosal-containing hepatitis B vaccines in their first 30 days suffered an astonishing 1,135% higher rate of autism than children who did not. Verstraeten also documented a grim inventory of other neurological injuries, including ADD, ADHD, speech and language delays, tics, and sleep disorders in children exposed to thimerosal. Verstraeten reported that these shocking signals prompted him to review for the first time the published medical literature, where he confirmed the alarming toxicity of mercury, thimerosal, to cause these injuries was biologically plausible. Overwhelming science, over 450 studies by then attested to thimerosal's devastating toxicity. Because testosterone amplifies the neurotoxicity of the mercury molecule, boys disproportionately suffered reduced IQ and a range of developmental disorders, ADD, ADHD, speech delay, tics, Tourette's syndrome, narcolepsy, ASD, and autism, following exposure to ethylmercury in thimerosal. Numerous studies link thimerosal to miscarriage and sudden infant death. There is simply no study ever published that demonstrates thimerosal's safety. In 2017, Robert De Niro and I hosted a packed press conference at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. We offered a $100,000 reward to anyone who could point to such a study. A prestigious group of scientists, including UCLA Fielding School Emeritus Professor of Epidemiology and Statistics, Dr. Sander Greenland, toxicologist and past director of the Environmental Toxicology Program at the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences, Dr. George Lucier, and Dr. Bruce Lanphier of Simon Fraser University and British Columbia Children's Hospital, agreed to judge the study. There were no takers. In 2001, the Institute of Medicine recommended thimerosal's removal from all pediatric vaccines. In accordance with the IOM recommendation, manufacturers removed thimerosal from childhood vaccines, Hib, hepatitis B, and DTP, except multi-dose flu vaccines in the United States beginning in 2001. Japan and the European governments had already dramatically reduced mercury levels in their vaccines as early as 1993. The European and U.S. bans left pharma struggling to unload stocks and find new ways to monetize stranded assets, the hundreds of millions in production facilities committed to mercury-based vaccines. Bill Gates came to pharma's rescue. Gates helped pharmaceutical companies unload their thimerosal inventories by dumping them in developing countries. Merck, with the help of Bill Gates and Gavi, brokered a deal to donate, dump, 1 million doses of their thimerosal-containing Recombivax HB hepatitis B vaccine to the Millennium Vaccine Initiative to African countries. The White House hailed Gates' corporate welfare initiative as an unprecedented level of corporate support in a press release issued March 3, 2000. Despite the discontinuance in Western nations, Bill Gates and WHO continue to use their power to force African children to submit to a battery of potentially dangerous mercury-laced pediatric vaccines. Strong evidence suggests that African boys with higher testosterone and chronic vitamin D deficiencies are far more vulnerable to vaccine and thimerosal injury than whites. When it comes to pharma profits, dead and brain-damaged African babies are merely collateral damage. In 2012, Dr. Fauci waxed philosophical when a reporter asked him to describe an example of one of his useful collaborations with Gates. Perhaps, he speculated, NIAID would work with Gates and Gavi on a project to remove thimerosal from African vaccines. What is used now is thimerosal, which is frowned upon because of concerns of mercury. So Seth Berkley, Gates's Gavi director, and I were talking about finding a preservative for these multi-dose vials without thimerosal, so we no longer would have the baggage associated with it. By baggage, he apparently meant the millions of neurologically injured African children. There is no evidence that this particular collaboration survived its stillbirth as a hypothetical reverie. 8 years later, Africans are still carrying that toxic baggage. It's a crushing, often mortal, load. Lethal malaria vaccine experiments. Malaria claims some 655,000 lives annually, mostly African children aged under 5. In 2010, the Gates Foundation funded with $300 million a Phase 3 trial of GlaxoSmithKline's experimental malaria vaccine, Mosquirix, in 7 African countries, aimed at young children because their immune system is still developing. GlaxoSmithKline contributed $500 million. NIAID contributed tens of millions in a battery of grants. Lesser funders included USAID, CDC, and Wellcome Trust. Gates is heavily invested in GSK. Apparently suspecting the vaccine might be lethal, Gates' team elected not to test it against a placebo. They used instead highly reactogenic meningitis and rabies vaccines that themselves were never tested against a placebo. The meningitis jab was famous for causing alarming numbers of injuries and deaths. The use of a reactogenic placebo, a so-called faux-sibo, is a deliberately fraudulent gimmick that unscrupulous vaccine companies deploy to mask injuries in the study cohort by purposefully inducing injuries among the placebo cohort. Clinical trials that omit true inert placebos marketing masquerading as science. Some 151 African infants died in the trial, and 1,048 of the 5,049 babies suffered serious adverse effects in both control and study groups, including paralysis, seizure, and febrile convulsions. Eager to secure the WHO approval necessary to license GSK's vaccine for global distribution, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation brushed aside the lethal outcomes of these experiments, declaring the trial a mild disappointment, but vowing to press on with the project, casualties be damned. The efficacy came back lower than we had hoped, but developing a vaccine against a parasite is a very hard thing to do. The trial is continuing, and we look forward to getting more data to help determine whether and how to deploy this vaccine. He demonstrated his resolve by donating an additional $200 million to finance more defective GSK research. Even with Gates's generous grubstake, GSK's crooked clinical trial researchers could only muster a feeble claim of 30% efficacy for their infanticidal jab. Undaunted, Gates rolled out Mosquirix in 2019 as the first malaria vaccine in sub-Saharan Africa. It turned out to be another genocide for girls project. According to the publication Science, Mosquirix's efficacy and durability are mediocre. 4 doses offer only 30% protection against severe malaria for no more than 4 years. The biggest concerns, however, are about the vaccine's safety. BMJ's associate editor, Dr. Peter Doshi, points out, these were a rate of meningitis in those receiving Mosquirix 10 times that of those who did not, increased cerebral malaria cases, and a doubling in the risk of death from any cause in girls. Dr. Doshi says WHO's malaria vaccine study represents a serious breach of international ethical standards. The demonstrated risk worried WHO so much that it retreated from its plan to roll out the vaccine across Africa in favor of smaller pilot programs in Malawi, Ghana, and Kenya that will administer the vaccine to hundreds of thousands of children instead of the 100 million that BMGF had hoped for. Virologists and academics around the world kept mum about Gates's Mosquirix deaths. Gates's plump purse, his impeccable connections, his power over the virology cartel, and the weakness and needs of African governments once again insulated him from the consequences of all these dead children, with the exception of Dr. Doshi. Lethal meningitis vaccine experiments. In 2010, Gates funded a Manafrovac campaign in sub-Saharan Africa. Gates operatives forcibly vaccinated thousands of African children against meningitis, causing approximately 50 of 500 vaccinated children to develop paralysis. Citing additional abuses, South African newspapers declared, "We are guinea pigs for the drug makers." Professor Patrick Bond, a political economist who served in Nelson Mandela's South African government, describes Gates's unseemly business, philanthropic practices, and the agenda of the Gates Foundation as ruthless and immoral. Population and sterilization vaccines. Early 20th century America saw the snowballing popularity of eugenics, a racist pseudoscience that aspired to eliminate human beings deemed unfit in favor of the Nordic stereotypes. 27 state governments enshrined elements of the philosophy as official policy by enacting forced sterilization and segregation laws and marriage restrictions. In 1909, California became the third state to adopt laws requiring sterilization of intellectually challenged Americans. Ultimately, eugenics practitioners coercively sterilized some 60,000 Americans. John D. Rockefeller Jr.'s keen interest in eugenics colored his passion for population control. The oil baron Scion joined the American Eugenics Society and served as trustee of the Bureau of Social Hygiene. The Rockefeller Foundation dispatched hefty donations in the 1920s and early 30s to hundreds of German researchers, including those conducting Hitler's notorious twins studies at the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute for Anthropology, Human Heredity, and Eugenics in Berlin. The Rockefeller Foundation curtailed donations to Nazi Germany's medical institutions before Pearl Harbor, but Rockefeller's success promoting the eugenics movement had already captivated Adolf Hitler. "Now that we know the laws of heredity," Hitler told a fellow Nazi, "it is possible to a large extent to prevent unhealthy and severely handicapped beings from coming into the world. I have studied with interest the laws of several American states concerning prevention of reproduction by people whose progeny would, in all probability, be of no value or be injurious to the racial stock." In the early 1950s, the Rockefeller Foundation conducted fertility studies in India that historian Matthew Connolly characterizes as an example of American social science at its most hubristic. In one of the collaborations with the Harvard School of Public Health and India's Ministry of Health, the Rockefeller Foundation studied 8,000 tribal people in 7 villages in the Kana section of Punjab to determine whether contraceptive tablets could dramatically reduce fertility rates. According to Lindsay McGoey, the villagers were treated like lab specimens, subjected to monthly questioning, but otherwise ignored. Rockefeller's researchers did not initially inform the Punjabis that their pills would prevent women from bearing children. McGoey describes the villagers as shocked, dismayed, and resentful to learn that the medication they credulously consumed was intended to render them infertile. Some were incensed by the effort to limit their future progeny. Over the next 2 decades, the Rockefeller Foundation conducted frequent anti-fertility programs in India and elsewhere, earning the growing animosity of physicians, human rights activists, and poverty specialists who criticized the foundation for focusing on population growth while ignoring the realities of persistent poverty that makes large families so indispensable to Indian and African villagers. Today, McGoey adds, the Gates Foundation is pouring money into experimental medical trials that are facing criticism, similar to those directed at the Rockefeller Foundation's Kana study. Like earlier philanthropic foundations, the Gates Foundation has the financial and political clout to intervene in foreign nations with relative impunity, and to remain unfazed when the experiments it funds go awry. Gates's fetish for reducing population is a family pedigree. His father, Bill Gates Sr., was a prominent corporate lawyer and civic leader in Seattle with a lifelong obsession for population control. Gates Sr. sat on the National Board of Planned Parenthood, a neo-progressive organization founded in 1916 by the racist eugenicist Margaret Sanger to promote birth control and sterilization and to purge human waste and create a race of thoroughbreds. Sanger said she hoped to purify the gene pool by eliminating the unfit persons with disabilities, preventing such persons from reproducing by surgical sterilization or other means. In 1939, Sanger created and directed the Racist Negro Project, which strategically co-opted black ministers in leadership roles to promote contraceptives to their congregations. Sanger stated in a letter to her eugenics colleague Clarence Gamble of Procter & Gamble, "We do not want word to go out that we want to exterminate the Negro population, and the minister is the man who can straighten out that idea if it ever occurs to any of their more rebellious members." When I was growing up, my parents were always involved in various volunteer things, Gates told Bill Moyers in 2003. My dad was head of Planned Parenthood, and it was very controversial to be involved with that. Overpopulation, Gates' father told Salon in a 2015 interview, was an interest he's had since he was a kid. In 1994, the elder Gates formed the William H. Gates Foundation, the family's first, focused on reproductive and child health in the developing world. Population control was an enduring preoccupation of his son's philanthropy from its inception. Gates has made a long parade of public statements and investments that reflect his deep dread of overpopulation. He describes himself as an admirer and proponent of the population doomsayer Paul Ehrlich, author of The Population Bomb, whom Gates describes as the world's most prominent environmental Cassandra, meaning a prophet who accurately predicts misfortune or disaster. By the way, I share Gates's fear that if humanity persists in juxtaposing exponential population expansion atop linear resource growth, we will all land in a nightmarish Malthusian dystopia. I'm troubled, however, by his apparent comfort in using coercive and mendacious tactics to trick poor people into dangerous and unwanted contraceptive programs. The proven paths to zero population growth are the mitigation of poverty and empowerment of women. Women with alternative career opportunities seldom choose the heavy and hazardous burden of serial maternity. Virtually every nation with a stable middle class has fertility below replacement rates, but Gates's careless public statements and the programs that he habitually funds suggests that Gates has involved himself in sketchy stealth campaigns to sterilize dark-skinned and marginalized women without their informed consent, including by the deceptive use of dangerous sterility vaccines. On February 20, 2010, less than 1 month after he famously committed $10 billion to the WHO, Bill Gates suggested in his Innovating to Zero TED Talk in Long Beach, California, that reducing world population growth could be done in part with new vaccines. The world today has 6.8 billion people. That's headed up to about 9 billion. Here he is almost quoting Bryant et al. Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, health care, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%. Gates's defenders and the Gates-subsidized fact-checker organizations scoff at critics who interpret literally Gates's 2010 statement that he hoped to use vaccines to reduce population. They explain that Gates intended by this inartful construct to suggest that life-saving vaccines will allow more infants to survive to adulthood, thereby reassuring impoverished parents that they need not have so many children. But this hypothesis rests on the sketchy premise that his vaccines reduce child mortality, a proposition that Gates has never demonstrated and that current science does not support. His peculiar choice of words naturally fueled speculation that he was engaging in a premeditated campaign to use vaccines to sterilize women. His questionable antics in promoting anti-fertility drugs and WHO's widespread use of stealth sterility vaccines credibly fuel such sentiments. Depo Provera, a cruel irony. Population control has been the central preoccupation of the Gates Foundation since its inception. In 1999, Gates's $2.2 billion commitment to the UN Population Fund doubled the size of the Gates Foundation. The same year, he funded, with a $20 million contribution, the founding of the Johns Hopkins Center for Population. In 2017, the Gates Foundation adopted the goal of administering contraceptives to 214 million women in poor countries. Gates's contraceptive of choice is the long-term infertility agent Depo Provera. Population planners have administered Depo Provera primarily to poor and black women in the United States since its invention in 1967. In the United States, 84% of Depo Provera users are black, and 74% are low income. Depo Provera's biggest promoter, Planned Parenthood, specifically targets blacks and Latinas in its marketing campaigns. UN data demonstrate that Depo Provera is seldom administered to white or affluent women or girls in the United States or Europe. Depo Provera is a powerful poison with a devastating inventory of wretched side effects. Under federal law, the Depo Provera label must bear FDA's most stringent black box warning due to its potential to cause fatal bone loss. Furthermore, women have reported both missed periods and excessive bleeding, blood clots in arms, legs, lungs, and eyes, stroke, weight gain, ectopic pregnancy, depression, hair loss, decreased libido, and permanent infertility. Some studies have associated Depo Provera with dramatic increases, 200%, in breast cancer risk. The FDA warns women not to take Depo Provera for longer than 2 years, but Gates's program prescribes at least a 4-year course, or indefinitely, for African women and goes to great lengths to avoid warning black women about the concoction's many drawbacks. Between 1994 and 2006, Bill and Melinda Gates teamed with the Rockefeller and Andrew W. Mellon Foundations, the Population Council, and USAID to fund a seminal family planning experiment administering Depo Provera to approximately 9,000 impoverished women in the town of Navrongo and districts of Ghana. Though USAID's stated underlying principles for family planning are volunteerism and informed choice, it hasn't always worked out that way. A disturbing 2011 exposé of the collaboration by the Rebecca Project for Justice, the outsourcing of Tuskegee non-consensual research in Africa, documented how Gates's researchers lied to the Navrongo women, telling them that they were receiving routine health care and/or social observations, never informing them that they were part of a population control experiment. Gates's researchers violated U.S. research laws by failing to administer informed consent forms to the women they injected with Depo Provera, nor did they obtain Institutional Review Board, IRB, approval for a human experiment that lasted an extraordinary 6 years. Under direction of Dr. James Phillips, Gates's PIs deliberately fabricated and falsified research data to fraudulently prove Depo Provera safe. Based on such proofs, in 2011, Gates expanded his project to fund Depo Provera programs for some 12 million women across sub-Saharan Africa. That same year, 2011, a study by another prestigious BMGF and NIH-funded research team from Gates's own Washington School of Public Health published an article in Lancet Infectious Diseases Heffron et al., 2012, reporting that African women who used injectable Depo-Provera were much more likely to acquire HIV/AIDS compared to untreated women. Depo-Provera injections double a woman's risk of contracting and transmitting HIV. This result was not an enormous surprise. For 24 years, diverse studies have shown that Depo-Provera thins the vaginal wall, easing transmission of HIV. Furthermore, the researchers found Depo-Provera exacerbates the rates of HIV/AIDS infections to a recipient's sexual partners. Despite her funding from Gates, the study's lead author, Dr. Renee Heffron, and her fellow researchers recommended informing HIV-infected women of Depo-Provera's grave risks and to use alternative non-progesterone-based contraceptives. Women should be counseled about potentially increased risk of HIV-1 acquisition and transmission. The confirmation of the risk by his own scientists posed an obvious conundrum for Gates, since it pitted his passion for population control against his avowed commitment to end the spread of HIV in Africa, population, it turns out, trumps HIV prevention in Bill Gates's catechism. Without offering any scientific research to substantiate their claims, Gates' deputies, a cabal of extreme population control advocates linked to Gates, worked with Pfizer intermediaries to viciously attack Heffron's research findings. The critics included BMGF, Planned Parenthood, the UN, Ronald Gray of the Gates-funded Johns Hopkins University, James Shelton of USAID's Office of Population, and others. Under these fierce attacks by Gates' minions in the medical cartel, Dr. Heffron and her research team courageously stood their ground and retained their professional integrity. The Lancet published Heffron's withering response. Dr. Heffron pointed out that her attackers cited no convincing science and that the two recent studies by Heffron and the WSPH team capped a quarter century of published research documenting increased HIV risk among women taking Depo-Provera. To combat this crisis, WHO, by then wearing Bill Gates' boot on its neck, convened a group of hand-picked experts, all sworn to secrecy, for a closed-door meeting in Geneva on January 31, 2012, to discuss damage control on the Heffron study and the mountain of HIV research that supported her. On February 16, 2012, WHO and its mysterious expert cabal, unsurprisingly, announced its preordained decision. Women living with HIV/AIDS or at high risk of HIV/AIDS can safely use Depo-Provera. Betsy Hartman, a longtime reproductive rights advocate, ridiculed WHO's convenient new guidelines. This reversal, despite 25 years of studies citing an increased risk of HIV transmission among women using it, raises question marks whether WHO abandoned caution due to outside encouragement by special interest groups. Hartman was clearly referring to BMGF. In the wake of WHO's self-serving declaration, Melinda Gates announced in July 2012 a billion-dollar contribution as BMGF's share of a $4 billion collaboration with USAID, PATH, and Pfizer, with the goal of promoting Pfizer's Depo-Provera across sub-Saharan Africa. Pfizer and USAID committed the remaining $3 billion to African contraceptive projects. Outcry and censure from dozens of international women's rights advocates and reproductive health groups greeted Melinda Gates's announcement. According to a detailed report by Jacob Levitch, the real agenda of the Gates Foundation, Mrs. Gates minimized the proven risk of acquiring HIV/AIDS with Depo-Provera by directing the public to a contrived 8-page technical statement published by the Gates Foundation's supplicants at WHO, assuring the public that Depo-Provera is safe and that all contrary scientific research that linked Depo-Provera to HIV infection was inconclusive. To quell the growing uproar, Gates funded a WHO study to debunk the HIV association once and for all. This time, he skipped over heparin to fund a more reliable group of researchers. Environmental lawyers call this sort biostitutes. On October 21, 2015, WHO released its investigation, which not surprisingly concluded that there is no evidence of a causal association between DMPA use and an incidence in women's risk of HIV acquisition. WHO then issued new guidelines that mirror precisely those recommended by Pfizer, Depo-Provera's manufacturer. Some 40 reproductive health groups demanded that WHO's director, Margaret Chan, sideline the new guidelines until Gates' study could survive a rigorous reevaluation process. WHO ignored those pleas. The centerpiece of the Gates $4 billion caper is a self-injection syringe, a plastic bubble attached to a needle, for administering Depo-Provera. Pfizer creates the gizmo, but Gates's Seattle-based Leggett, PATH, markets it under the new brand name CyanaPress. PATH's former director, Chris Elias, was by then president of the BMGF. Through PATH, Gates will distribute these devices, costing $1 per three-month dose, to 120 million women in 69 of the world's poorest countries. With contributions that Gates plans to squeeze from those governments, these lucky ladies will pay little or none of the cost. Pfizer, of course, will make a killing. According to the Wall Street Journal's Market Watch, Pfizer could potentially earn approximately $36 billion in sales, resulting from an unprecedented Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation investment, $560 million from BMGF, totaling $4.3 billion with government contributions, that promotes Depo-Provera as the optimum contraceptive for women of color and low-income women. Levitch explains that this scheme is a cunning dodge to evade U.S. regulations that require Pfizer's label include its dire black box warning bearing the words FDA, black box, warning, and osteoporosis, and that the administering clinician inform every recipient that the drug poses life-threatening harm. In the United States, pharmacists can never dispense Depo-Provera directly to a patient to self-inject, since the law requires that medical personnel counsel each patient about risks. Ignoring these safeguards in Africa would expose Pfizer to criminal prosecution and thousands of lawsuits under the Alien Tort Claims Act, which could allow aggrieved African women to sue negligent U.S. drug makers in U.S. courts if they suffer injuries as the result of failure to warn. Pfizer's apparent strategy for insulating itself from liability is to use PATH and BMGF as surrogates to market its contraception. Furthermore, to promote Depo-Provera's uptake among blacks, PATH makes a series of outlaw off-label claims that Pfizer could not legally make about the product. PATH claims that Depo-Provera protects against endometrial cancer and uterine fibroids, and reduces risks of sickle cell anemia and iron deficiency anemia, diseases that disparately injure blacks. FDA has never approved Depo-Provera for cancer prevention or for any of these other uses. It is therefore illegal for Pfizer to promote these off-label claims. Presenting Gates and PATH as its intermediaries is apparently also Pfizer's strategy for evading U.S. laws that prohibit off-label claims. Levitch adds, these statements, taken in totality, are contextually false and designed to specifically circumvent the FDA's black box warnings. If Depo-Provera is genuinely a safe and effective contraceptive with only minimal side effects, why then are Gates, Hopkins, USAID, Planned Parenthood, and Pfizer's other intermediaries, deliberately concealing the plain black-letter FDA black box warnings in their effort to minimize and conceal Depo-Provera's life-threatening harm. Put bluntly, Gates and his confederates are tricking African women into taking the contraceptive by deceiving them about its safety and lying about its efficacy against diseases that disproportionately harm blacks, something Pfizer executives could go to jail for. Gates's willing partner in this fraud is USAID. USAID's director, Dr. Rajiv Shah, has been a serial co-conspirator in Gates's many racist flimflams. For a decade prior to his gig running USAID, Shah worked for Bill Gates's foundation, 2001 to 2010, as the principal fundraiser for Gavi's World Immunization Programs. Shah candidly acknowledged that BMGF's and PATH's stamp of approval on Depo-Provera serves as a clever strategy for insulating Pfizer from criminal and civil prosecution for violating FDA regulations. Gates's caper aims to artfully remove the FDA's jurisdiction by using PATH as its surrogate and by effectively transferring regulatory authority to the WHO. The Rebecca Project for Justice characterizes Gates's African project as a family planning strategy that unethically targets women of color to prohibit births of beautiful black children by not informing mothers of Depo-Provera's deadly risks as mandated under U.S. law regulations, thus denying women of color their inalienable right to choose and access safe reproductive health. Depo-Provera came honestly to its notoriety as the tool of choice for racist eugenicists. Israel banned Depo-Provera in 2013, following a scandal in which government health workers seeking to radically reduce the number of black births were targeting African Jews with Depo-Provera. Sharona Eliyahu Chai, lawyer for the Association of Civil Rights in Israel, ACRI, condemned the government policy of preventing black Israelis from reproducing. Findings from investigations into the use of Depo-Provera are extremely worrisome, raising concerns of harmful health policies with racist implications in violation of medical ethics. In 2002, India banned this dangerous drug from all family welfare programs after a similar scandal. Government officials were targeting lower caste Indians. Many other nations, including Bahrain, Israel, Jordan, Kuwait, Qatar, and Saudi Arabia, prohibit the use of Depo-Provera on their nationals. European countries largely restrict the use of Depo-Provera and require full disclosure of risks for women and informed consent prior to its use. Gates and USAID have taken advantage of political disorganization in Pakistan to administer self-inject Depo-Provera to Muslim women. In contrast to its U.S. counterpart, USAID, the Swedish International Development Authority, SIDA, does not fund, purchase, or provide Depo-Provera for Swedish-assisted projects in developing countries. Sterility vaccines, chemical castration. Gates's defenders ridicule as conspiracy theory the suggestion that Gates or any reputable public health authority would use life-saving vaccines as a stealth vehicle for surreptitiously rendering women infertile. But one of Gates's earliest philanthropic undertakings was a 2002 project to administer tetanus vaccines to poor women in 57 countries. For reasons we are about to discover, critics credibly suggest that these vaccines may have been secretly laced with a formula the Rockefeller Foundation developed to sterilize women against their will. On November 6, 2014, 4 years after Gates pledged at a TED Talk to use vaccines to lower birth rates, medical researchers and doctors associated with the Kenya Conference of Catholic Bishops, KCCB, and the Kenya Catholic Health Commission accused WHO, UNICEF, and Gavi of secretly conducting a mass sterilization program against Kenyan women under the veil of eradicating tetanus disease. The Washington Post reported similar charges by the Kenya Catholic Doctors Association, KCDA. The Catholic doctors became suspicious due to WHO's glaring departures from the usual tetanus vaccine protocols. Normally, a single tetanus vaccine provides a decade of immunity. Since men and women are equally susceptible, both sexes routinely get the vaccine. But WHO instructed Kenyan doctors to give the vaccine in 5 administrations, 6 months apart, and only to girls of childbearing years. The defense that the WHO intended only to target maternal and neonatal tetanus seems odd in view of the fact that males are about as likely as females to be exposed to the bacterium, which is found in the soil everywhere there are animals, observed a 2011 peer-reviewed study of the controversy. The Catholic doctors also noticed other unusual features of the campaign. For starters, WHO suspiciously initiated its jab campaign not from a hospital or medical center or any of the estimated 60 local vaccination facilities, but distributed shots from the luxurious New Stanley Hotel in Nairobi, an exclusive resort out of reach to most physicians or public health officials. At considerable cost, a police escort accompanied the shots to vaccination sites, where police officers strictly supervised their handling by nursing staff and required clinicians to return each empty vial to WHO officials at Nairobi's only 5-star hotel under the watchful eyes of armed officers. 4 years later, in October 2019, the Kenyan Catholic Doctors Association accused UNICEF, Gavi, and the WHO of rendering millions of women and girls barren. The doctors had by then produced chemical analyses of vaccines, verifying their allegations. 3 independent Nairobi-accredited biochemistry laboratories tested samples of the WHO tetanus vaccine, finding human chorionic gonadotropin, HCG, where none should be present. In October 2014, Catholic doctors obtained 6 additional vials and tested them in 6 accredited laboratories, finding HCG in 1/2 of those samples. In 2019, a group of independent researchers from Kenya and Great Britain, led by University of British Columbia neurologist Dr. Christopher Shaw, studied the charges and concluded that the Kenya anti-tetanus campaign was reasonably called into question by the Kenya Catholic Doctors Association as a front for population growth reduction. The medical researchers characterized the WHO program an ethical breach of the obligation on the side of the WHO to obtain informed consent from those Kenyan girls and women. Catholic medical personnel made similar accusations about WHO's tetanus projects in Tanzania, Nicaragua, Mexico, and the Philippines. Following indignant denials of all such accusations and obligatory denunciations against its accusers, WHO grudgingly admitted it had been developing the sterility vaccines for decades. WHO nevertheless punished the Kenyan doctors and the community officials who reported the spiked vaccine by canceling contracts for future work.